Coming up on today's podcast, it's playoff time as the regular season comes to a close early. We review Wire's season so far in a year of higgledy-piggledy results. Sam investigates the COVID players, positive and negatives. Daniel comes up with a priceless section. We wave goodbye to Toronto. Rimmer's lot goes off with a bang. And yes, unfortunately, by no request whatsoever, Lockdown Letters returns. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and as Biden wins the US election, Wire are Bidening their time to play their next match, because Warrington were set to play Saints on Friday, until that all changed. So while we forget Saints for now, where are my two saintly, angelic podcasting angels? Firstly, from a man that's blood pressure rises on his Sphygmo monometer every time he queues up his Betamax box sets to watch Charlie's Angels, it's Sam Bosley-Sankey!
Hello, good evening from Warrington. You did well with that pronunciation, didn't you?
And also, forget queuing Charlie's Angels, because the only queue this old lad's queued in is a line of Charlie. It's Dennis Snowwaywell.
All right.
Now, we should say that we've sort of switched it round tonight, boys, because it's Sunday morning here in Sydney, and it's Saturday night over there in the UK. And as I just say that, both of you have got a drink in your hand. You're both smashed. I'll start with you, Dennis. What's your tipple tonight?
I've got an aerator on, so excuse this noise because it takes a while to pour. But this is a red Sancerre, and I do take offence, actually.
Not again.
I do take offence the fact that you're suggesting that I've got cocaine about myself, but I'm more of the psychedelics, which is apparently Oregon have just voted in psilocybin, which is a mushroom.
Are we going political? Are we going political, lads, early? Is that what we're doing here?
No, not.
Good. And what are you on, Sam?
I've got a bit of a cocktail of drinks tonight.
surprise.
I'm finishing off the last bit of Prosecco. I've made some linguine vongole with tea this evening and some Prosecco with it. But there's just a little bit of that left before I move on to my nice gin that I've got just waiting for me.
Is this a celebration because we've made the playoffs?
Is that what it is?
Brilliant.
It's a Saturday night.
I'm a little bit hungover. We had a neighbour's party last night. We had all the neighbours round from the street, which was all the keys went in the bowl about 11:30 last night. I woke up at number 4 this morning with Bruce Donaldson. I tell you, it's a bloody long walk back with a unripened zucchini up your arse. I'll tell you that. But anyway, there's the way things are. Right. No game to discuss, lads. So I thought, what are we going to fill this section with? We're going to fill it with the regular season. We're going to go back through the games, strap in. It's a long bit. And we're going to look at each result and try and cast our mind back to some of them and think what we could actually remember happened during the game. The season for Warrington started way back on Thursday, the 30th of January, 2020. We went to Wigan. We lost. Wigan 16, Warrington 10. I seem to remember that you two soft cocks were there that night.
Yes. So if you remember, the What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast crew got the first press pass of the season. And I entered the Wigan press office, whatever it was. And there was Kenko and Tetley's tea bags on offer for the press crew. That was a really highlight of my evening. Sat there for 10 minutes. With a load of journalists, quite a dire affair, I would say, as I sat there and waited for my first prize question, which, if you ask me what it was, I can't remember.
No,
it was something to do with Ashton. It was an Ashton question.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Ashton made his debut that night. Anthony Gelling played his 150th game. It was also the fourth time Warrington had lost on the trot at the DW Stadium. Chris Hill was sent off in the 23rd minute, and we also lost Cooper for 10 minutes in the second half. Do you think if those two players had stayed on the park that night, Sam, we'd have won the game?
I remember us coming away, and even though we'd lost, it almost felt like a victory because we'd played some lovely rugby, and we really felt that if Hill hadn't got, I mean, he needed to go. It was a sending off, but we felt like we were the better team, even though we only scored 10 points.
No Gareth Widdop that night. We also had him waiting in the wings to come back. So all in all, I think we were pretty upbeat, weren't we, lads? I think that's the way it sort of sort of came across. Well, the following week, it did get a lot better because on the 6th of February, it was the first game at the Halliwell Jones. Warrington 19, Saints 0. I'll start with you, Dennis. What did you make of that one?
I really enjoyed that. It was a great, it was like a building on, it was building on week one. And week two, it was almost as though everything came off and, like, you know, everything worked. Defence was, like, top-notch. We, you know, we really showed Saints a taught them a lesson. The one thing that I do remember was, what's his name, Wolf, in the press conference. Because, again, we had a pass there. We were asking all the questions. Yeah. He seemed a bit of a mean bastard. So there you go. That's it.
It was the first time that Warrington had kept a team scoreless since we beat Wigan 23-0 in 2018 in the Challenge Cup. It was the first time Warrington had nilled Saints since 1982 when we beat them 16-0 in the Lancashire Cup final.
Wow.
So Matt Davis, you sometimes think possibly hasn't been at Warrington for too long. That was his 100th Super League appearance as well. So... yeah, lot. So really going into that third week, we were really positive, were we, lads? We thought, this is it. This is going to be our year, Sam.
We were so positive that I decided that on a really wet and windy and possibly slightly dangerous to drive over the Pennines day, that I'd go to Wakefield.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Well 16th done. Of February, Wakefield 18, Warrington 8. Sam, you were our roving reporter there that night. There was a few expletives, if I remember right, in your WhatsApp texts.
It was fucking freezing.
Oh, dear.
That's alliteration, that. That's alliteration.
Is it?
There you go. Yeah. We blew it. We blew it, if I remember well. It was a horrible day. It was really a cold, biting wind. It was a heavy pitch. We got into the lead and then through a dire pass, more or less an interception really, that got them into the lead, and we blew it.
It was the first time that Warrington went out on the field with a 6 and 7 in Blake Austin and Gareth Widdop. The last time we'd started with the numbers on the backs of Warrington players at 6 and 7 was Kevin Brown and Tyrone Roberts in the 2018 Super League Grand Final. So it just sort of shows how sort of, you know, disruptive we've been in the halves during that period of time. We'd waited long and hard to see Gareth Widdop. Did he make much of an effort that night, Sam? What did you think of him?
He was involved in our try. He looked a bit leggy, looked a bit slow, but the whole team did. But you saw what I think we've seen elsewhere. Little touches of class, but not involved enough in that particular game.
Well, we went back to the Halliwell Jones on the 21st of February to play a game that I'm not too sure, Sam. Is this still in the record books on the league table or was it actually taken out? I can never remember which one.
This one was taken out.
This one was taken out. So it was Warrington 32, Toronto 22. I've hardly got any recollection of this. Is this the game that Matty Ashton scored the good try? Was that the first time he got away and scored?
Yes, he scored in the corner in front of the away end. From about halfway, he took on the fullback and beat him there. I don't remember much myself, other than it was a strange game. Never felt we were going to lose, but it was a to-and-fro game, throwing the ball almost like an exhibition or a pre-season friendly. Mm. It was offloads for fun, most of them hitting the floor with your friend Sonny Bill. Throwing the ball all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he kept getting all those high stats for offloads. Yeah, about 2/3 of them went to ground and got picked up by the opposition.
How were you feeling at this point of the season, Rob? Being like, you know,
pretty fresh, to be honest. We were about 5 or 6 recordings into the podcast. I clearly still wanted to do it at that stage of the season, and my nerves weren't shot like they are now. So I was still pretty upbeat. I was in gainful employment. If I remember rightly, by this stage, you may remember the scientist for the podcast, a gentleman by the name of Rob London, mentioned a pandemic, which was laughed upon by two gentlemen living in the UK as we went into lockdown. Hence why last night we had a neighbour's party in the road with no sign of COVID. But I digress. It was also Matty Ashton's, as you said, first game where he scored a try, and Stefford Ratchford's 1,000th Super League point. He scored 132 points for Salford, and the one he banged over that night made it 868 points for Stefan Ratchford. Tom Lynham also, it was his 150th try. So I think at this stage, lads, I'm about 7 out of 10. What would you rate it, Sam? At this stage of the season, 7 out of 10 I'm giving it.
No, I wouldn't quite go there because I was so disappointed with the Wakefield.
Yeah,
with the Wakefield look. But
had you dried out by that stage?
I was just about getting warm. I was just about getting warm by that stage. But yeah, if you look back, we played Wigan and Saints. We could easily have lost both games, but we didn't. We won one well, and we felt we'd played well in the other. So yeah, okay. I'll go with 7 out of 10.
Okay. Dennis, you've oxygenated your wine. What are you giving it?
Where are we again?
Jesus. See, this is what happens, Sam. This is why we just...
Have we played Leeds at this point?
Right, we'll come on to Leeds. We're coming... Forget Leeds. Let's just pretend that's not happened. You've just left the Toronto match.
Yeah, I think I'd be a 7. I think I'm waiting for this Leeds game to say, oh, here we go. Going to be top of the table. Take it away.
Friday, the 28th of February. Leeds Rhinos, 36. Warrington, zip, zilch, nothing. What a shower of shit. Was that our worst performance of the year, Sam?
Oh, we were all over the place, weren't we? I don't. It was almost as if we'd got caught up in traffic on the M62.
Jesus. What happened that night? What happened?
Brand made his debut. Didn't Brand jump out of the line on a few occasions?
Brand struggled, didn't he? Luther came on and was ineffective. But we, in fact, the whole team was ineffective that night. It was a shame. You couldn't believe it was the same team that had showed up against Wigan and Saints in the first 2 weeks of the season.
We completed 18 of our sets out of 31. Leeds made over 500 metres more than Warrington that night. I mean, wow, that really does sum it up. And Leeds, to be fair, are pretty shit at that stage of the season, weren't they? They hadn't really set Super League on fire at all.
Yeah, and they haven't set it on fire through the whole season after they've been very up and down.
Well, let's move on to March then. March, Friday the 6th, we played Castleford Tigers at home. I don't remember too much about this one at all, boys. Final score, Warrington 9, Castleford 8. Were we on the edge of our seat, Dennis?
Yes, we were, actually, because we were at the match again, weren't we, Sam? And I think it was one of those games where it was nip and tuck, but who was it who scored the drop goal? Was it Austin?
Austin.
Yeah, Austin. Yeah. But weren't there a few missed drop goals before that one went over?
They were. I felt this was where our season turned round, if you like, because that game could have gone either way. Mm. I felt the general play in the game, we were on top. But we couldn't get away. We couldn't get that second try. We scored one very good try, but we couldn't get away. And then the drop goals, I think they missed two and we missed two before Austin slotted it over. And it felt like a huge victory because Price, after losing 36-0 the previous week, was perhaps the team were perhaps under a bit of pressure. And it felt like a big victory that.
It was our lowest winning score since we beat Hull 7-6 in February 2015.
So, if I remember rightly, was that the one where you said to me, ask Price if he was asking for a taxi to the airport?
I could have been Dennis. Could have been Dennis.
I think it was. And I declined to ask him that question.
You were very, if I remember at that stage, Rob, never mind saying 7 out of 10. 2 weeks before, you were very down on the
was
team.
I? That's was I? Yes. Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, and rightly so, I think. I mean, if you look at, we just, got away with a fluky win against Castleford on a drop goal. It wasn't like it was an intense State of Origin game where it was 8-8 and the game had been brilliant, was it? It was a comedy of errors towards the end.
Oh, no, don't be negative.
Oh, sorry.
Don't be negative.
I'm still, to be fair, I'm still a little bit pissed.
It was a game that, in hindsight, I really enjoyed.
Did you? But obviously, you need to get out more.
If we'd have lost it 9-8, I'd have been, that was shit, that was rubbish. But having won it,
swearing.
It was, again.
Right. Well, the following week, on Thursday the 12th of March, we went to Hull. And all of a sudden, we turn it around. Why a 38, Hull 4? It's the night that Radford gets sacked from his
Who's
job.
Who's Radford?
Yeah.
No, it's just that when you said Ratchford before, you said Radford. And now you're saying Radford, I'm thinking you mean Ratchford. So carry on.
We're coming to the end of the season, Dennis. We're all trying to get on and be nice to each other, and you're attacking me. It's like you've got your nails out ready for someone to fall, haven't you? That's what this is all about.
I've noticed this when he's had a drunk, had a drink.
Yeah, I'm drunk.
Had a drunk. He goes from his normal affable self to a bit more aggressive.
Doesn't he, Sam? Thank you, Sam. Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I think Gareth Widdop scored a good try that night. Did we have the wool pulled out of our eyes a little bit? The fact that Hull were trying to get rid of their coach that night.
We started quite well. Again, Austin scored. Austin seems to love playing at that stadium. If we can get to the grand final, it might be his day. But he seems to love playing at that stadium. But we then scored just before half time when Toby King galloped away from a dropped ball by Hull, and he looked like he was running in treacle before giving it to Tom Lynham. Yeah. And that try just before half time, I think that made it 12-0. It might have been 10-0, 10-12-0. Yeah. And that seemed to change the whole game, the whole night, because second half, Hull crumbled. We grew in confidence and scored some lovely tries in that second half.
It was our first back-to-back Super League win since we beat Wigan and Catalans 10 months previously.
Yes, yeah.
That's how up and down the form had been. So Mike Cooper made his 200th appearance in Super League. Ben Murdoch-Masilla made his 100th Super League appearance. And Anthony Gelling got his first try for Wire. So all in all, lads, it was looking pretty good, wasn't it? Then, of course, COVID hits and we go into lockdown. So Warrington went in with a pre-COVID lockdown record of played 7, won 4, lost 3, a 57.14% ratio.
It's not very good, is it? 57.14, really?
Wasn't. If you took that Castleford game, as Sam's just mentioned, that really was the big turning point of the year, wasn't it? Had we lost that one? You know, possibly Hull had fired Radford the week before and had a new coach in place. It really could have been a little bit tits up. What were we thinking then, lads? Were we thinking possibly we'd just have, 10 days off and then we'd all be back out on the field and this little bit of flu would have blown away?
I thought it was serious, but I did think that by...
Because you'd listened to that scientist in Australia in January, hadn't you?
Yeah, but I did think that maybe by July or August it might be sorted. But
I had a lovely holiday booked in Dubai in June, and yes. I was still holding out that I was going, but I remember the missus saying, get the money back, it's time. And I thought, no, let's leave it a few more weeks. Mm. So.
I thought I was going to Toronto on the 3rd of July.
Oh, geez, listen to these middle-class bollocks. I'm going on holiday today. I'm going to Toronto. Most people are just wondering whether they can get to the caravan in Prestatyn.
Says you, living down there in your little Tory belt of the Cotswolds. Unbelievable.
Let's move on.
Yes, move on. Warrington then went 148 days before playing their next match. We eventually stuck our head above the parapet on the 8th of August, and Warrington beat the most entertaining team in world rugby in Hull KR. It was Warrington 40, Hull KR 10. I seem to remember it was quite close for the first sort of 10 minutes, wasn't it? And then all of a sudden we broke away. Getting that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was close for more than 10 minutes. It was close until Sitter went under the post because they took the lead when we weren't even bothering to look at the kickoff, and they did a short kickoff. We scored a nice try. I think it was Lynham. I know it was Curry who broke through. I think he gave it to him.
He did. I don't believe
and
that.
And then Sitter went under the post, and all of a sudden, the pressure that we'd had started to turn into points, and we relaxed a bit. And the most entertaining team in world rugby were making us look good. That's how entertaining they are.
Do you think anybody will appreciate this, what we're doing now? Because no. I can't remember fuck at all.
It was the first time Warrington had scored 40 points since beating Huddersfield, 50 points to 19, in April 2019. So, at least we were scoring points again. How worried were we about Hull KR, the most dominant team in world rugby, possibly winning the World Cup and also winning State of Origin at that moment in time? I think this is when we just completely drew a line on disguised commentary, wasn't it, when they started coming out with that shite. They'd all been away from the microphones for too long, and that was a really bad night of Phil Clark.
They were getting excited,
Mary and
weren't
Terry.
They?
Unbelievable. Yeah. Right. Well, then we won again, didn't we? Where did we go next? After that, we went to
Huddersfield,
Saturday the 15th of August. It was played at the Totally Wicked Stadium. Of course, we're now on games where we're playing them home and away, but they're not really home and away. Most of them are at neutral grounds. And we won 19-18. I have got no recollection of this result whatsoever. I can't remember a thing about it. Did we even play that game?
Yes, we did even play that game. We looked the better team, but couldn't put any distance between us and the opposition. We scored a couple of lovely long-range tries in the second half. One was from what might be a slightly dubious pass about 2 yards forward to Widdop. And another lovely try when Austin took a little chip kick through from Huddersfield. We moved out to our left. Toby King was stood up in a tackle with three men and just offloaded it to Tom Lynham. And that took us well ahead, but we had to rely on a Blake Austin drop goal to win it. Mm.
I've got a note here, Sam, that it was Ben Curry's first try of the season. The reliability of Ben Curry scoring a try for Warrington at this point of the season is 10% when he takes to the park. So, well, the following week, we win again. This is when we really start getting on a roll. On the 30th of August, we play Wakefield Trinity. It's seen as a home game, and it was a home game. We played them at the Halliwell Jones, albeit with no one there apart from 700 security guards. Final score was Warrington 36, Wakefield 0. This is when Wakefield really were struggling, wasn't it? Wakefield have just absolutely fallen off the perch at this stage. Were we still on points rather than percentages at this moment in time?
We might have been, but this was about when the decision was taken, right at the end of August, maybe the first few days of September, wasn't it? And this game was on the 30th of August. What I'd like to say is, despite Mr. Clark's insistence that Hull KR are the most entertaining and most deserved team in Super League, I perhaps think Wakefield, who did it so tough and didn't cancel any of their games and put out juniors, deserve a special mention. And in particular, that game, they managed to infect one of our players and make us have to stand down six others.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, worth a mention, Sam. Thanks for that. That's absolutely superb.
Now, this is also a good point to mention. Toby King, who is set to play the Australians probably next year in the World Cup. It was his first try of the season.
Really?
Yeah. Toby King's first try of the season in round 10 of Super League, playing at centre. So
let me just pour myself another drink.
If you, Dennis, poured yourself a bit of a larger drink, you wouldn't have to keep pouring it.
I know, but I like the sound of the aerator, especially when Tony King comes.
It's actually Tony Ring, I think he's called now, isn't it?
Oh, it's Tony Ring, yeah. I do apologise.
Sam's little thing last week. Right, okay. We move on now to the next game, which was Hull FC at Headingley. It was in September, on the 4th of September. Warrington, a game win, and we win convincingly, 37-12. A dominant performance. We're getting on a bit of a roll here now, Sam.
As I alluded to a few minutes ago, if you remember, this was a game where we had all the players missing, and Latte even scored a try.
Yeah, that's right. He came on, didn't he? Okay. We were getting a little bit, I think they were getting fined at this stage, weren't they, for over-celebrating. Wire record their sixth victory in a row. Ratchford passes now 1,000 points in a Warrington shirt. Ben Curry makes his 150th Super League appearance. Toby King makes his 100th appearance, and there were debuts, as you say, for Leilani Latte, Ellis Robson and Ellis Longstaff. I think this was the night we saw Robson and thought, why is he off to Ottawa?
Yes.
This lad's good.
Exactly.
I think I've said it before. I think he established himself quite well in the first team. I think he looked like he was a seasoned player right from the off. So it was a surprise to learn that he was going to go to Ottawa, but to that later.
Do you know what? I think I've got Alzheimer's or something, because this is a complete blur. I've just heard Dennis in the background, sort of. I've no recollection of that whole game. And then the following week on Sky on the 10th of September, we beat Castleford Tigers again by a narrow margin, this time by 2 points. We win 12-10 at the Totally Wicked Stadium. Again, Sam, do you remember much one about this one? And I'm sorry I keep coming to you, mate, but I just can't remember a thing.
Because he can't to me because I've no idea. That's why.
Dennis is pissed and you've got Alzheimer's. I don't know.
Come on.
You can't forget this. You can't forget Matty Ashton scoring with just a couple of minutes to go.
Oh, is that big? You see, the season's gone on for so long. It's very hard to remember what where we are, isn't it? That's right.
We've scored. Patton stutter pass put Ben Curry clear, and he gave it to Ashton.
Did he?
Just about evaded a tap tackle and scored under the posts.
Yeah, he did.
And I think if I remember rightly, we'd gone 10 minutes with Marmomite off the pitch there as well.
Yeah, we did. 19th of September, forget Super League, because it's on to the Challenge Cup. Bizarrely, we start the competition in the quarterfinal. I think we were due to play another game, but then it all obviously went COVID tits up. So we start our Challenge Cup trip to Wembley in the quarterfinal. And we win. It's Warrington 20, Saints 18. Saints are at the top of the table, but we keep beating them, Sam. We've clearly got the edge on them at the moment. They're almost becoming their sort of voodoo team, aren't we?
Yeah, after all those years that we couldn't beg, steal or borrow a win, we seem to have confidence playing them. For me, 30 minutes of that game in the first half was the best continual period of rugby we'd put together. They scored a nice try early on, although suspect pass, and then our heads didn't go down. We started to dominate. We had tries disallowed. We scored three tries. We went in way ahead, and that was really the Warrington Wolves that we can be, and we don't see enough.
I think this was the highlight of the season, wasn't it? I think we got to the point where it was a bit up and down. I think we didn't really know where we were. We hit this game, we beat Saints, and I felt at the time that we were top of the world here. I thought, actually, you know what? This year we're gonna do some damage. We're really gonna sort of like maybe win the cup, Challenge Cup, maybe go on well in the league as well. And I think that's how I felt at that time.
Yeah, and you're right, didn't it? And that was six games in a row that we won. It was eight games if you go back pre-COVID when we'd beat Hull and Castleford. But we'd not played any of the big boys, but St. Helens are one of the big boys, and we beat them. Yeah. So you're right. You thought, hey, up, this could be it.
We've played St. Helens 20 times in the history of the Challenge Cup. What percentage do you think we've got of beating Saints in Challenge Cup games?
I'm going to say 54.
Something you're going, how lower than 54?
You say we've played them 20 times, did you?
20 times we've played them, just get on with it.
We've won the last two. I'm going lower than 54. Lower than 54. I'm going to say we've won eight out of 20.
Oh, good game. You didn't do well.
It's 30%. 30% of the matches.
Yeah, how disappointing.
I know.
Pretty good. Six.
Also, another little fact for you here, while I just quickly do the calculation. At that stage, what success rate, percentage-wise, and I'll start with Sam this time, has Steve Price had at Warrington in the Challenge Cup?
Oh. Well, I could work it out, couldn't I, if he had enough time?
Just have another enough time, sip of your drink and give us an answer.
75%.
Oh.
84%.
90.90%.
Wow.
Yeah, he'd only actually lost one Challenge Cup game ever at Warrington.
Oh, I thought it was two.
Well, he's about to lose two, but at that stage, he'd only lost one. 25th of September, we're back in Super League, and it's another win for Wyatt. It's Warrington 30, Catalans 16. Now, this is where it all started getting a bit messy, didn't it, on the percentages. And I think at this stage of the season, Catalan had only played three games. So I think that was
two games.
This was a big win. This was a big win, though, because Catalan, I think, hadn't really shown their colours because of not
Dennis,
played.
It's plural. unbelievable.
Catalans hadn't really shown their true colours. I said Catalans. It's a fucking microphone. Catalans haven't really shown their true colours because actually I think they've got a pretty good team and I think they've been playing quite well. So again, leading on from the Challenge Cup, I think this was another good win in the league. And again, feeling very buoyant and sort of like on top of our game from a Warrington fan supporter.
9 wins in a row, that was. That was 9 wins in a row.
Did you think we were home and dry at that stage, Sam? You thought that was it now? We're in whatever the playoffs were going to be. I mean, yes. I'm not quite sure what they decided on at this stage, but we looked like
It was still top four at that stage.
Yeah, definitely a win. Okay, right, let's move to the next game, which was final score on the 29th of September. Warrington 18, Salford 20. Now, we're going to come on to Price in a little while, so we might try and just edge away from that at the moment, but it is very hard possibly to talk about this game without sort of mentioning the team we put out and what happened. But we just, I mean, had we just had a couple of senior players out on that park that afternoon and we win that game, we top Super League.
I was livid at this because it was almost treated as a throwaway game. You know, it was a case of like, we're going to throw everybody out there from the, you know, like the fringe players and so on. And hopefully, you know, if we get something out of it, then fair play, you know, that's great. But there was no point or there was no sort of effort or any thinking around how are we going to win this game in terms of like, you know, like you say, putting a few sort of experienced players in there to sort of like take the young kids through and have a real good bash at winning the game. I think at this stage, because of our percentage points, it was seen as though actually, you know what, we can afford to lose this with the next Challenge Cup coming up. And I think that was a real big mistake.
Mm. Sam, want to have a guess at what the average age of the Wire team was that night?
21.5.
Oh, brilliant. See, this is why he's the stat man, Dennis. This is why he's this absolutely
spot on. Because it's written down here.
Oh, is it? Oh, sorry. We also saw senior tries for Roebuck and Riley Dean. There were debuts for Nathan Roebuck, Connor Wrench, and Kylie Shelford. And Deck Patton, we shouldn't forget this, the lovely Dick skippered the Warrington team for the first time. And
I just want to say, actually, that even though we did lose that game, this is nothing like it's not a criticism of the guys that they actually brought in. I think they actually they played above their they played really well. That's not the point I'm making. I think what it needed is just a bit more.
Two more senior players, maybe three senior players, and we win that game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're on the park and, like, you know, you're in that sort of, like, arm wrestle. You need somebody there to just sort of, like, say, right, this is what's going to happen now. This is what normally happens, blah, blah, blah. And this is how we're going to get through it. This is how we're going to win it. And I think that bit of experience was missing. And I think it was a shame.
It was a team selection fuck-up, wasn't it? Let's face it.
That's basically what it was, yeah.
Hmm. I'd say our centre, who played a full season at...
Oh, he's a real Kieran Brand hater, Dennis. Here he goes.
I'm not a hater. Here he goes. But he's a proper experienced player, albeit at championship level.
Doesn't he sound very good, Sam?
What are you saying? Come on.
Say it again.
He had the opportunity to put Sitalecki in for a walking try with 10 minutes left. That wins us the game. That was a bad individual choice.
Do you think it's his brand of play?
Ah, dear. It was also a night of Area 51 because it was reported in Super League that young Danny Walker, God bless him, because he did play very well, made 71 tackles, only to discover when we actually counted it back, and this is being generous, he made between 61 and 63 tackles. I don't know where on earth they got 71 from. The following week, well, it's the Challenge Cup on the 3rd of October, and it's Salford again. Final score, and this for me was the most depressing part of the season. Salford 24, Warrington 20. The game was played in Kuala Lumpur.
Thailand.
It was moved across here to try and get that Asian market behind us, and Salford came out on 24 to 24 points. It just seemed, in all our WhatsApp messages that night, you could just sort of see this narrative building that we were going to lose. You know, we weren't putting the game to bed, Sam, and all. You thought, oh, the longer this goes on.
Yes.
And then it went and happened, didn't it? It was just bad. We just played badly.
It almost followed the previous few days game against Salford with the kids. It almost followed an identical trajectory, didn't it? That we looked really good to begin with. As you say, we didn't put them to bed. Then they start coming back. The longer the more they start coming back, the more confident they get, the more tighter we look, the less likely we look at scoring. And it almost had an air of inevitability about it. And really disappointing. So real, real disappointing defeat, that.
You know what? It was almost like, at the time, although it was disappointing, and I was thinking to myself, you know what? Okay, we've gone out the Challenge Cup. And actually, at this time of year, this is when the grand final would be played in sort of like the first week of October, yes, or whatever. The conditions were shit, this, that, and the other. And this is where we always sort of seem to trip up. And I was thinking, well, you tell you know what, we'll bounce back from this. And then in the next few weeks, we'll start like getting our game together and we'll start like, you know, making our sort of like headway towards the top of the table, win the, you know, League Shield or whatever it's called.
It's hubcap. Actually, we should probably just, it's no longer a hubcap. It's now been changed to a plectrum. No. It's a plectrum now. That they've changed it to. So we could have been stroking
big
chords
guitar,
at the top
though.
Of the... Yeah. It is a big guitar, yeah, no doubt about it. Right, well, the following week, it's the 9th of October. We're back into Super League and it's Warrington 14, Wigan 18. I thought this just absolutely ran with the same theme, Sam, as the week before. It was just deja vu, wasn't it? Again, we just couldn't take control of the game and we let Wigan right back into it at the end.
We start lovely. We get the penalty try. Chris Hill goes over. We're playing some lovely rugby. And then we don't score again.
I think this is where doubts start coming into it as well, is that, you know, we've had this like fuck up with like, you know, a double whammy against Salford not winning. And then like all of a sudden we're back in the throng of it. And essentially, like, you know, what the trusted, like, you know, systems and, you know, the strategy is, it's not working. And then it's almost like panic is coming into the play now, is that we're not able to execute like we were in some of the other games. And, you know, we don't forget, a couple of weeks before, we were singing the praises. We were saying we had options all over the park. We were, you know, we could do this, we could do that. And all of a sudden, we're devoid of any kind of offensive opportunity or anything.
You've been quite offensive towards me tonight, Dennis, if I must say.
You've
had one too many drinks and it's just gone. It was Steve Price's first loss at home in 2020. So just sort of touching on that, because obviously clearly a lot of these games now, after we came back from the COVID break, were played at neutral venues. I think, Sam, and I mentioned this on the podcast, if I seem to remember, that it did seem to benefit teams like Warrington and Wigan and Saints, the teams like Wakefield and Castleford and Hull KR, where you never really want to go. And as you mentioned at the start of the podcast, you know, you went to Wakefield and it was grim and everything else and we lost. It affected those teams more than the likes of the teams with the more flashier grounds, so to speak.
Yeah, I think possibly, particularly for Warrington, St Helens and Wigan, where I know Wigan haven't played at home, but when two out of the three rounds are at Warrington and St Helens, those three teams don't have to travel more than 25, 30 minutes to get to the ground. And even when we go to Leeds, it literally is only if you go at the right time of day, it's only a 50-minute journey. Whereas if you're coming from Hull every week, or if you're coming from Wakefield every week to play, Leeds is close to them, of course, but coming over to play away at St Helens or away at Warrington.
Yeah, I need to take task here. What's a flashier ground, Mr. London?
Clearly, you know, every week when you've been to these grounds, you talk more about the catering than you actually talk about the game, don't you? And apparently it's a very good lasagna at Warrington. It's not too flashy, but it's a little bit flash.
Yeah, but I've never seen the lasagna because I've always been in the pub with Sam because I can't get him away from his pint glass.
Dearie me. Do we think also, though, that that sort of home advantage reffing goes away? You know, when you're sort of, you know, you're reffing at Castleford and you go, you know, all that goes away, doesn't it? Than when you've got no one in the stadium.
What the hell was that?
Hey, that was a Castleford fan. That was my generic Castleford fan.
Jesus.
The following week, on the 13th of October, Warrington played Leeds at the Halliwell Jones. Agar plays all his kids, and Warrington win 32-6. We struggled for a little bit for a while, Sam, but in the end, we came out on top.
It was a perfect game for us, really, because we looked like we were struggling for 40 minutes. Then Darrell Clark came on in around about 48, 49 minutes. Mm. And all of a sudden, we get on top, we score three or four lovely tries, and the scoreline looks great, doesn't it? 32-6. That looks a perfectly healthy scoreline. Mm. Yeah. But it was a real struggle for the first half.
Was a bit like,
I think,
that.
When they brought on Adam Cuthbertson, I think they did quite well then, didn't they, Rob? What did you think? How did he play? What do you think?
I thought they did all right when Cuthbertson came on, but you know. Right, our final game of the regular season was the following week. It wasn't the following week. It was a couple of weeks later, on the 30th of October, Warrington 19, Huddersfield 12. I start to think here we show a little bit signs of glimmer of hope that we're coming into form, Sam.
This was the day we played two matches at the same time.
Oh, it's a good job we've got the stat man, Dennis. He's all over it. We'd have missed that.
Our A team were playing Salford at the same time as our first team were playing Huddersfield, if I remember rightly.
Mm. Okay.
Warrington's post-COVID lockdown record was played 12, won 9, lost 3, a 75% winning ratio. Wyre's record, therefore, in 2020, before entering the playoffs, and this includes Challenge Cup as well, was played 19, won 13, lost 6, a percentage of 68.42% winning ratio. The regular season, including the Challenge Cup for Warrington, lasted 274 days. Wyre and the Warrington fans averaging a game every 2 weeks and 2 days. Boy, it's been a long season. The podcast, though, didn't stop. During this time, we brought you 40 podcast episodes. In fact, if you listen to every episode back to back, it would be like getting home from work at 5 o'clock on a Friday, listening to them all weekend through both nights and being back at work and finishing them off just after lunchtime on Monday.
Oh, lovely.
God, that's almost like torture. If China get hold of this podcast, the next time they intern somebody, that's what they'll do. They'll just play that for them and keep them away. God almighty.
Which one has been, out of all those podcasts and all those hours effort we've put in, which has been your favourite show? Which was the one you looked forward to the most and came away and thought, I really enjoyed that?
Mine's not happened yet. Mine's the one where we do it in sort of late November, early December, and you do your Christmas sing-along, and then you say, right, lads, nothing more to do for 2 months.
Well, you know what? It's funny when you do this podcast, because the thing is I think when we're winning, and it did feel like that sort of for the first half of the season. Like I say, when we were sort of like, you know, we beat Saints and then we went on to beat Catalan. It's almost like you sit back in your chair, you relax, and it's like, oh, yeah, we talk about the good times, this, that, and the other. But I have to be honest, you know, when you look back now and the last month or so, and if you think about like the form and how we feel the team are playing, the podcast reflects that as well. And every week it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, how are we going to try and pull this about this?
I tell you what, lads, we shouldn't forget that in all those 40 podcasts, we did also have some great, great people that came onto the podcast to help us out. With Daniel and Dave Birch, and then all, you know, Dave Woods, Lee Breers, Steve Anderson, John Clark. But the favourite for me, I remember being in the supermarket when we had made the calls. The minute we heard Inglis was coming to Warrington, I got on the phone to his agent and then hounded his agent for probably a week, every day leaving message after message, trying to promote that, please bring him on the podcast. And I got this phone call when I was in the frozen section at Woolworths to say, we've had a listen to the podcast. Greg's had a bit of a listen to it. He's doing only 2 interviews. He's giving Brian Carney 5 minutes and he's doing the Warrington Wolves podcast. And I pretty much came in my pants when I was down the aisle. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then that moment when we were sitting down, I was all dry mouthed. And he came on that Zoom call and he was fucking
enormous.
Massive.
Yeah. Why did it get? Why was his arms filling the screen?
I just remember looking at that and thinking, Keenan Brand or Greg Inglis? And I thought, Jesus Christ. And also,
love to know what was in his microwave.
Yeah. That stare he get, like, all the way through the podcast. And, you know, we spoke to him before and we spoke to him after. And I just came away going, this bloke's coming to play footy. Like, it just this determination. And what it reminded me of, and I've thought about this in the last few weeks, was the great Tony Barrow, when he had that Warrington team. There was a lot of rumours that went round at the time that they were all petrified of Boyd in the changing room. And when we won that premiership in 86, Tony Barrow was brilliant. You know, defence win matches. They all really played for him. He reminded me a bit of Ian Watson, the way he'd come through the A team. But apparently, no one stepped out of line in that dressing room because Boyd was there to win it. And I just get the impression when Inglis turns up next year, if anyone fucks about, God help them. Because he's a winner. He's a winner.
He was intense, wasn't he? Yeah.
Is this some way of you getting Tony Barrow on this fucking podcast?
No, I understand completely what Rob's saying, because Greg Inglis was polite. He was informative. He joined in with what we were doing. But exactly as Rob said, he was imposing, wasn't he? His sheer force of personality and size of an individual, as you say, anyone fucks about, steps out of line, boom, you're done.
Do you think he's still coming, Rob?
Well, we reached out to his agent the other week and it was a big thumbs up. We got the thumbs back from his agent. So at the moment, he's definitely coming. I mean, the only worry is the COVID, but he's a man of his word. He was a man of the word when I was in Woolworths, putting in the frozen curry into the trolley. So I don't think he'll defrost. I think he'll be all over the podcast. Let's have a look at the final table then. So it's finished with Wigan out on top with a 76.47% winning ratio. They played 17. Saints and Warrington both played 17. Surprising to see Saints actually drop to the same percentage as us, as at 70.59. Catalans came in at fourth with 61.54. Leeds Rhinos in fifth on 58.82. Hull in sixth on 52.94. They make up the top six going into the playoffs, and then Huddersfield are on standby with their 38.89%.
I think it's interesting just to look at Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Is it? 1-7, lost 11. 1-7, lost 11. And they're on standby for the playoffs. Bloody hell.
How many would they have won if they'd not had Cesar in their team?
Nothing.
Any of those teams? It's funny. I went back to the very first the pre-season podcast where we gave our predictions. I went for Wigan, Saints, Warrington, Catalan, Leeds, and Hull. They were my top six predictions, and yet again they've fallen in line.
The Catalan Dragons. I'm still not sure what to make of them. Yeah.
It's not Catalans Dragons at this point.
No, it's Catalan Dragons.
No, Catalans Dragon.
So if I just drop the Dragons bit and say Catalan, that doesn't make a difference.
Catalans, yeah. And it is...
Got to point that out.
And they are still up and down. They can play brilliant. They can play brilliant.
One la la!
And be awful the next. Yeah, very much. Very much a stereotypical French sports team.
Oh. Yeah, Rob, I'm sick of sitting here, actually, and you're firing it over to me and Sam. Give me your summary of where we're at with this league now as it ends with, like, you know, Wigan at the top and so on. Tell me how you feel.
Well, as I've just pointed out a few minutes before, I mean, I predicted the top six. I predicted
pandemic.
I got Greg Inglis on the fucking podcast. I mean, I think
About like the season's regular season.
Do you know what? I feel a little bit empty inside. Now, I don't know whether that's because, you know, I've basically been out of work for 9 months. I mean, the absolute time of my life going to the beach every day. Or the fact it's something to do with Warrington. I don't know. I just feel that I've lost my calling in life and I need to find it again in the next few weeks. And really, my whole personality is on a knife edge now based on how the Warrington season will turn out to be, really.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Mrs. Waywell, could you get me a gin and tonic, please? I'm feeling like I'm going to have to act like the Samaritans for Mr. London.
Has she just brought in a hostess trolley or something? There's a lot of clinking going on.
I've actually got 40 bottles of gin, of small miniatures, that have been picked up last year, and it's like potluck. Yeah. Carry on, Rob, sorry.
Now, we all remember Leslie Crowther and the classic game show where a group of 1980s ITV retro chav contestants guessed the prices of a range of consumable products. So skip forward 35 years and nothing's changed, as it's time for Daniel to come on down and tell us if the price is right.
At the start of this year, I recorded a soundbite for this podcast on what would represent a successful season for Warrington, and in it I set three aims: win a trophy, a top three finish in the league, and a more entertaining style of play. As the coach, Steve Price has ticked one of those off by wire finishing in the top three. So far though, there has been no trophy, with a semi-final exit to the Challenge Cup and no League Leaders' Shield, leaving only the Grand Final as a possibility, and you would have to consider both Wigan and St Helens as greater favourites than ourselves for that one. And then we come to the style of play. To give Price credit, Wire have played some expansive and entertaining stuff this season, far more than in 2019, particularly with some of the long-range tries we've scored. However, the same problems of 2018 and 2019 have continued to occur. Wire desperately struggle to break down teams near their line. The attacking structure still isn't good enough or threatening enough. In 3 years at the club, Price has had a different 6 and 7 partnership every year. Tyrone Roberts and Kevin Brown in 2018, Blake Austin and Declan Patton in 2019, and then Austin and Gareth Widdop this year. No matter what the personnel has been in the halves, the same problems have happened. Surely at this point it is clear as daylight that the issues are down to the coach, as he is the common denomination with all of the combinations we have tried. When you look at the attacking players that Warrington have, Stephen Ratchford, Darrell Clark, two NRL quality halfbacks in Austin and Widdop, it is absolutely unacceptable that Wire have such a hard time creating and scoring points, and that, I'm afraid, is down to the coach. This is a very expensively assembled squad, and Price is getting nowhere near enough out of it. The word identity is often used when talking about coaches and managers in sport. What is the identity of a Price team? What does Steve Price's team look like? 3 years in, his team hasn't evolved, and if anything, is backpedalled. If Wire win the grand final, this may be seen by some as grounds to keep hold of Price, but I would not go along with this. In sports like rugby league, where trophies are awarded based on one-match shootouts, it's very hard to assess a coach's true influence. His greatest success at the club so far was a Challenge Cup win in 2019, which, when it comes down to it, as brutal as it sounds, was won because of St Helens putting in their worst performance under Justin Holbrook. I think it would take a similar story if Wyatt won the grand final this year. It's all well and good turning up for a one-off match, but Steve Price has not built any identity, evolution or foundations with this Wyatt team over the last 3 years, and if he did win the grand final, then just like last year's Challenge Cup, it would be despite him rather than because of him. A better coach would have had a squad like Warrington's absolutely dominating this league, and that should be the ambition for next year. A coach that promotes attacking football and gets the very most out of the immense talent at his disposal. That isn't Steve Price.
I will leave the light on.
Are you still leaving a light on at the Halliwell Jones for Steve Price?
As of today, yes.
Oh. Can we just say now, just for all the podcasters that are listening to this show here, Sam had his head in his hands as he said that.
No, I had one hand on my head because I'm trying to.
Why don't you have a drink, Sam? Just have a little.
Go on,
drink.
Have a drink. Have a little drink before you come out with it.
Have a sip.
Just wet your whistle. Here we go. Come on, Sam. Come on, tell us the way it is. Come on.
Steve Price can win us the grand final. My issue is, can he actually get us there in the first place?
Oh.
His style of rugby...
Is that a reverse caveat?
Just exactly like we saw at Wembley last year, the Challenge Cup final. If he goes up against St Helens or possibly even Wigan, I have no doubt they can win. And actually, I feel they've got more chance of winning a backs against the wall type game than when we go in favourites. And that almost sounds like an oxymoron, if you know what I mean.
I've had that before.
You're calling Price a moron.
No, I am not. I'm not letting you put words in my mouth like that.
I like how he said, no identity, despite him. Oh, what did he say? He said, despite him. No, because of him. And I thought that was quite good. He did say we were expansive. I think Daniel's really sort of hit the nail on the head. I'm with Daniel here in the fact that it's difficult being a coach and stuff like that. But I go back to what Cal Fitzpatrick says about, like, you know, finishing fourth and Challenge Cup isn't good enough for this year. And I know it's been a difficult year this year, but actually I think we've probably been one of the clubs that have actually come off quite well from our squad point of view. And I think actually we've had an opportunity to take advantage, and I feel that we've missed an opportunity. So that you know, I think I tend to agree with him, and I do like the fact, again, I like Daniel, the way he just sort of like says it as it is, and it creates a debate.
We should be beating Salford and going to the Wembley final. Mm. So next week we play Hull. We should be beating Hull and going to the semi-final to get potentially to the grand final. If we were to lose next week, Steve Price might come under some pressure internally.
Sam, you've got the big light on for him. I'm saying, Dennis, you've probably got a bedside light on for him. Is that the way?
No, I've got a dimmer switch.
You've got a dimmer switch set to half dim at the moment, would I say?
That's just under, actually. Right.
Okay. I think, metaphorically, we've got a candle on for Price at the moment. I think it's on his desk at the Halliwell Jones, and I think it could go one or two ways. I think it could fall over and accidentally catch fire to the curtains and the whole fucking room goes up in a massive ball of light, in a bit like what Sam's saying. He might get to the final and then win it. So I think there's a little bit of a Frank Spencer here that could get him to the final. Beautiful display lit up. But I also think possibly the window has been left open and there's a bit of an easterly draft coming through from the Humber that's going to blow that candle out.
Oh, dear.
Dennis, no hubcap for Warrington this year. As we all know, the hub being an integral part of the wheel, mankind's greatest invention. What invention would you like to see the world invent next?
Well, the one thing I'd like to focus on and invent would be synthetic meat. Oh, cultured meat.
Jesus
Christ. Oh, show me. Now, some food critics...
Can't you get that at Ben Westwood's food emporium?
Not yet, but some food critics tucked into the first lab-grown burger. Now, they said it was a bit dry, but I think it was in 2013. It took 2 years to grow, $300,000 to produce.
What do you mean? I get a couple of dry beef flaps every week.
Well, yes. In 2016, Memphis Meats produced a cultured meatball for $1,000. And since then, many companies have produced variants of pork, chicken and fish. Now, the only few years away from being like around about a $10 burger, right, in any flavor, an Israeli firm has created a cultured chicken device, which is used for the home as well. So
that doesn't sound kosher.
Actually getting to synthetic meat. Well, it's not cooked. I like that.
Very good.
What does this mean for an invention? Well, it's an end to animal cruelty. It'd be a massive climate change difference by having, like, you know.
Hang on, is this this week's tackle bags?
No. And that's the thing about
Sam,
it, actually.
Sam, can I just now say to all the listeners, Sam has now got both his hands on his head.
Yes. But, you know, I'd like to focus on the health benefits of cultured or synthetic meat. It's full of protein, iron, vitamin B12, amino acids, L-carnitine, which is part of...
He played for Halifax in 88.
He probably did. And that would help the mitochondria and antioxidants, fat burning, minerals, zinc. And I think the thing about it is that, you know, actually, when you think about it, these are all things that would help with a pandemic in particular. But the most important thing, it would end vegan and vegetarians.
PCB calls on Sean Long's neck to be covered at all times with a polar neck sweater after a confused tawny owl tried to fuck his Adam's apple. Salford forfeit all their remaining fixtures as director Ian Bleas announces they're down to just three players: a retired tea lady, an asthmatic dog, and even worse, Kevin Brown. And gridlock on the M62 finally subsides following highway police escorting a wide berth HGV from the motorway. In a statement, Professor Broomhead said, "I only popped out on my Vespa for 3 ton of Pontefract cakes."
Okay, we've heard the headlines, onto the stories. Super League clubs have voted against allowing Toronto Wolfpack back into the competition in 2021. There were 13 votes in all, 4 voting yes. The teams that voted yes were St. Helens, Catalans and Leeds. And also Ralph Rimmer put his hand up as well.
Good lad.
8 voted no: Wigan, Salford, Castleford, Wakefield, Hull, Hull KR and Huddersfield. And Elston put his hand up for a no. The only team that abstained was Warrington. Dennis, is the Canadian dream over, or has it just been a total and utter nightmare?
Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you look at the report that Elston put out, and you could call this sort of almost like influencing the vote, if you like, but, you know, I think we've always said on this podcast is that, you know, the practicalities of having some Canadian team in the league has its limitations, especially when you've got obviously the pandemic, whether it's a volcano or whatever it is, the cost of flying back into Canada, which is, you know, quite a way away. I can't remember how many miles it is.
Can I just stop you here and say that I listened to 40/20 discussing this for nearly an hour on their podcast this week. Yeah. And I've only just come out of the coma. So if we can keep it brief, lads.
I'm keeping it brief. So I think that we always recognise that it would be very difficult to have a team that is so far away. And I think even if you look at the NFL, when you think about the NFL, they group them up into sort of like regions. And, like, you know, they don't all play each other across country and everything because it's distances, like, you know, too much.
Love. So I think. Love. Is any of that wine left from last night?
Never mind.
Can you get
me
a pint? A pint of wine, please.
Pint of wine. Anyway, I think the thing about it is that this sort of like report said it all, that it isn't a viable option for us. It can't work. Let's focus on a bit more nearer to home, whether that be Toulouse,
the London, Cumbria Otters.
Or Cumbrian Otters.
I'm really petrified to go over to Sam now because he's got a big wad of notes that he's just sort of put in front of himself. The minute I started doing the intro, he had his hand up. He was like, "Oh, let me get in on this one." Right, come on, Sankey.
I don't need to say much. Don't worry. It'll only take 30 seconds or so. A couple of things. First of all, Warrington abstaining is a disgrace. Presumably for political reasons is not good enough. Secondly, I loved the romantic idea of Toronto. They went through the leagues and they deserved to be where they were. But the report that came out talking about their finances was shite. And we have heard that their proposed owner, or the proposed new CEO, actually joined the first conference where they put their proposal, sat in his car on his phone. That's simply amateur. We don't even do that.
Well, to be fair, so you did in one episode.
Yes, I did remember one episode. You did, yes,
that's because you said, I couldn't have the week off. But moving forward,
this is still the 30 seconds, is it, Sam?
Yeah, moving forward, we've decided to go with 12 teams. So a team's coming in and they've voted to give them less funding than the other 11 get. That's shite also, because you're setting them up for failure. And really, I despair at what our governing body is doing, and it will never
be. Who's our governing body, Sam?
The governing body are the clubs themselves. So they're going to vote themselves a preferential position. It's bollocks. Ooh, and I'm really, really annoyed. Ooh. I don't know whether that's come across.
I had a preferential proposition last night, yeah. If you must know. Yes,
very good.
Right.
Rob?
I couldn't give a fuck. England coach England coach Shane Wayne has added Toby King to his England squad. King joins fellow Warrington players Daryl Clark, Mike Cooper, Ben Curry, Joe Philbin and Stephen Ratchford. Two Wolves players, though, that have been dropped from the England squad are Josh Charnley and Chris Hill. I think that kind of about sums it up, although I do think Hill's been in pretty good form recently. Charnley, for me, a little bit of a letdown this year, Sam. He hasn't really touch the heights of previous seasons. I do think, I was talking to my dad about this, that Charnley's lacked a yard of pace ever since he's bulked up. You know, he scored that fabulous try for Wigan at the Halliwell Jones a few years ago in the Challenge Cup where, you know, he gets the ball in the clear and he's gone. I know we're using him as a battering ram now, but
yes,
to me, I'd like to see a bit more pace on the wing.
You're right. He's almost like an extra forward.
And time now for Rimmer's Lot, which I've certainly had my lot of watching. Still, with the nights drawing in, it'll soon be time to look forward to the new John Lewis Christmas advert. I wonder what it'll be this year. Perhaps an apocalyptic scene where a smug middle-class family shoot their neighbours as they desperately defend their last tub of hummus. And as the world spirals to an end, eat their own dog, having first butchered it in front of the children on the kids' trampoline. Or maybe they'll pretend Armageddon hasn't arrived and they'll run with a piss-weak Elton John soundtrack promoting their home furnishing accessories. They're doing a very reasonably priced Egyptian cotton hand towel at the moment for only £8.
Oh, Stevie, it's important tonight goes off with a bang, in both a literal and metaphorical sense, I think. Bonfire night is a perfect opportunity to light up the museum. We still haven't really recovered from Chris Hill turning into a randy werewolf at our Halloween party. Is there any word from the hospital in London about his condition?
I phoned Nurse Alex Price this morning. He's moved into a flat.
Oh, that's good to hear. At least now he'll be getting his head down into some proper busts. Oh, I'm sure we were all just hallucinating on the RFL potent punch. I have to say, Stevie, you were hopping around like a kangaroo, especially when Jenna Brooks asked you about the Super League table and percentages. Anyway, let's put it behind us. Oh, by the way, was Nurse Alex Price any relation to you, Stevie?
Oh, I think she's a distant niece from Woolamaloomaloomaloomaloo. Before she went walkabout.
Now, Stevie, have you stuffed the RFL guy?
Yeah, it's all sweet, Rolfie. I've stuffed the Robert Elson effigy full of the local paper sports stories from Mike Parsnips.
Yes, ironically, you do go into a vegetable state when you're reading them. Yes, yes, that's right, Stevie. Put the guy on top of the bonfire. Yeah, use the Toby King fifth tackle step ladder and be careful. I believe they've been significantly overused in the past few years and the last few steps are quite flat-footed. wait a minute, Stevie. That guy looks very familiar. Is that Simon Maranatha-Vovich?
Yeah, Rolfie. I've been coaching his money up in flames all season.
Yes. Unlike Ian Watson, he's only used a penny for his guy. Oh, and Stevie, did you bring your cut price box of fireworks? You know, the limited edition rugby league coaching sparklers collection you designed.
Oh, I'm dead set pleased with them. Look at the variety. There's a DNA shot tube, a hard-nosed fairing, an airborne repeater, and a price intensity directional traffic light fizz.
Yes, your fireworks really are a box of standard. Ooh, I think that'll be the OHS officer, Richard Silvergood, finishing off his safety inspection. I've heard he's very hands-on.
Aye, all seems in order, Grimmer. Although I'm not sure about the Catherine wheel being secured by just a little prick.
Oh, well, that's no way to talk about Stevie.
I've also inspected the cellar, Grimmer. It's a fucking mess down there. There's hundreds of empty pizza boxes.
Oh, how strange. I thought Professor Broomhead had luncheoned in the canteen.
Yes, well, it's a fucking disgrace. I also marked you down for illegal storage of barrels near the fuse box. I've never seen such bollocks. Why have you got a bunch of round, wooden, empty, rotting butts sitting in the corner? It looks like a scene from a Sky commentary box.
I'm sorry, Mr. Silvergood. I thought we only had a 9-gallon butter firkin down there.
Oh, I didn't see Stuart Cummings anywhere. Right, well, you better get it fucking sorted. Right, I'm off to check my Twitter account before Ben Thaler stabs me in the back again. Oh, Tony Smith gets one of his wandering eye-catching excuses about officials. That was the best fucking ref you ever had, Grimmer. I was only being friendly when I touched a boo.
Oh, jeez, Rolfie. He's a bit highly strung. We better go and check these barrels out.
Yes, I think we better, Stevie. I hope he wasn't referring to any Luther barrels. The last thing we need is to deal with some of those unwanted rugby union tubs.
Oh, I cannot see a thing down here, Rolfie. I'm completely blind-plotted.
You've got your eyes closed, Stevie.
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't see that coming. He's right, Rolfie, look. Oh, shit. All these barrels are full of gunpowder.
Oh, tackle sacks.
Oh, it looks like someone's been trying to blow up the museum, Rolfie.
Yes, well, that was a one-off, and I said at the time Jamie Peacock was just helping me with my belt buckle.
Look here, Rolfie. They're all Super League branded. Looks like your old friend Elston has deposited his obsolete Old Trafford Grand Final fireworks stock.
Yes. Well, he does have a habit of depositing his shit everywhere. And let's be honest, the grand final is in Hull now.
Introducing to the stage a confused old man, no doubt about to review the wrong episode as he's living in La La Land, it's Sam Beatty.
Well, this week, I've got a recommendation. Imagine if your dad wrote a dirty book. Most people would try to ignore it and pretend it had never happened, but not Jamie Morton. Instead, he's decided to read it in this world award-winning comedy podcast. That's what I'm recommending to you this week. My Dad Wrote a Porno. Let's leave Rimmer's Lot alone and let's move on to My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Right. I'm a bit confused, Rob. Are you with us?
Is he... Sam, are you there? Hello?
Yeah. You said I was a confused old man about to review the wrong episode.
Oh, dear.
Right, so you prefer a porno. Is that what you're saying? Right, exactly. Rob, we're going to write the next one.
Excellent. I'll get my pen ready. Now, whether you like to take it to the left or to the right, or perhaps ram it home up the middle, last week, Sam endured watching over 60 Warrington tries to find their exact scoring location. So with his coordinates set like a statistical exocet or a factual scud mark, it's time for another explosion of...
statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
Yes, okay. Hello, and statistics will take a different path this week because rather than looking at facts...
Well, it's going to be good.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't get your hopes up. But it might take a little bit of interaction from you two.
Strap in. Come on, let's go.
Donald Rumsfeld once famously said, as we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. And there are known unknowns that we don't know.
So
as we go into the playoffs, it's not just the odd injury or form that can influence things.
Was he a big rugby league fan?
No, he wasn't, to be fair.
Do you think Price would say something like that, or has he got the intellect to sort of put that sentence together?
I think he'd do that without realising he'd done it. But I think the biggest influence that we could have over these next 3 weeks is COVID-19. So results from the last 2 weeks of testing, we've had 1,196 tests. And of them, 1,162 negative, leaving 34 positive. That's 2.8% of the players and coaching staff testing positive. Now, recently, Castleford and Hull KR have separately confirmed the majority of positive cases. And in fact, Castleford have confirmed 15 positive tests at their club over the last 2 weeks. But elsewhere, the situation isn't so clear. And that's where we have to try and look into what's happened over the last couple of months to see whether any of our clubs might be at risk of not being able to field a decent team within the playoffs.
So basically, Sam, what you're saying is that we've got basically a situation where certain clubs have had more cases than other clubs. And as we go to the playoffs, end up with like, all right, I'm just summarizing, you know. Summarizing, I didn't say that right. You can cut that bit. Anyway, we're going to summarize the fact that the six clubs remaining, some of them are going to be in a better place when it comes to COVID. Yeah. Okay.
So if we look at the current top four, Wigan, in September, they had one person reported as positive. In October, three people as positive. But the results from the 26th of October gave them a completely clean bill of health. The only player we think we know has had COVID at Wigan is Oliver Gildart. And that's only because it was reported he was self-isolating in mid-September with symptoms. And then the following week, they confirmed that they had three positive tests.
To be fair, if I lived in Wigan, I'd fucking self-isolate all the time.
Exactly, exactly. But it looks like Wigan haven't had much in terms of herd immunity, if we dare use that word.
Oh, right.
Now,
okay.
Isn't that
our back row?
It is. It should be. A herd of wildebeest going majestically across the plain. Now, St. Helens, I did a trawl of the rugby league sites and I spent half an hour looking at the St. Helens Star. That was a depressing read. There's no mention of any St. Helens players testing positive in the last 2 months. The only news of a St. Helens player testing positive was on the 3rd of September, when one player was positive and two of us had to self-isolate.
Two of us?
So again, two others at St. Helens had to self-isolate.
Right.
So again, are they good at isolating or are they good at keeping things confidential?
Mm. Or did they just not have any doctors in St. Helens?
They could do. But it's a similar story.
Let's just pause. The top two teams have had very little COVID impact at this stage.
Very, very little reported COVID impact.
Okay.
So I think Dennis is trying to get a bias theme going here with his little CNN thing going at the top there, or his Fox News. He's definitely already on one side of this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Carry on.
Rob, if we look at Castleford. If we look at Castleford now, bear in mind, within 2 weeks, they went from no positive test to
riddled.
15.
Riddled.
Yeah.
Fucking all over each other.
Do you want me to do my Castleford fan again?
Go on.
Sounds like Sam's dog. This is going to be a nightmare to edit. Carry on, Sam.
Tonight, my dog's had his version of crack cocaine. He has to have stuff rubbed on his gums to calm him down when fireworks are about.
Jesus Christ. Right, come on.
Anyway,
carry on.
Warrington, similar story between Warrington and St. Helens, because during the first week of September, we had one positive test after the Wakefield game. And importantly, we had to have six players self-isolate. Mm. So that shows how much this can influence your team for the following week. We've not had any cases confirmed since then, although we believe we've had one player self-isolating at the very least over the last couple of weeks, but it's not been
Matty reported. Ashton?
I couldn't possibly say.
Okay.
Now, if we move on to the fourth place, the Catalan Dragons, during the last 3 weeks, they've been hit hard. They've returned seven positive tests in mid-October. But according to reports last week, they've all now returned negative tests.
All right, so
they're given a clean bill of health. So have they therefore had their dose? Are they potentially the cleanest bill of health and the best chance of getting to the grand final?
So they've played the least amount of matches. So from a fitness point of view, they've also had like their dose of COVID, which was over a month ago. And now they're sat pretty in terms of like what the expectation is over the next month in terms of like if that
I think their biggest challenge is next Friday against Leeds Rhinos, because Catalans haven't played a lot of games, they might not be completely match fit. But if they get
through
that...
How are Leeds going to get on? They haven't got a guy.
Well, Leeds...
That could be a benefit to them.
Yes.
Leeds this week have had a member of the coaching staff test positive. So Richard Agard's not the one tested positive, but he's got to self-isolate. And 2 weeks ago, they had four players stood down after their game with Castleford. And although it was 2 weeks ago, and they all supposedly tested negative at the time, it depends exactly which day they started their isolation period, whether they will be available for this coming Friday. And three of those players, we believe, simply because they didn't play those 2 weeks, were Myler, Hurrell and Pryor. So three key players. And finally, we've got Hull. Now, it might be fair to say Hull play every other week as though they've got half the team missing through COVID.
But
back in August, they had 12 players and staff test positive. So again, this idea that they've had it go through already. But really, do any of us see Hull actually winning the grand final, winning three games in a row? No, I don't. They might.
Make a note of that, Dennis.
They might beat us, but I can't see him winning three games in a row. So in summary, whichever team protects their bubble the best might well be the ones to lift the grand final this year.
Well,
excellent.
Thanks for that, Chris Whitty. Back now.
Next slide.
I really do think this is going to sort of pay off in the next few weeks.
Stop pointing at the screen. How aggressive you are tonight. Screen.
I'm on gin now.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebadged it. Yes, wait for it. It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. Lockdown letters. Emails. Texts. Tweets. Twitches. MySpace. Bebo. Friends reunite. Those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole that turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
Yes, it's back, everyone. Here we go. Come on. Are you sitting comfortably, lads?
Sam's... I've got my head in the hands again.
Lockdown letters. It's been away for quite a while. Thanks to everyone who sent in their lockdown letters. Apologies, we've not read them out over the past sort of 15 weeks, but these two soft little cockers didn't want this section on the show. So I'm pleased to say it's now back. And I've come back with a really good letter that we received on Wednesday.
Can you just say,
we've
sacrificed tackle bags for this section.
Yes. Excellent. Okay, so we've just got the one letter. It's quite a long letter, lads, but I think you'll like it. It came in on Wednesday. It's come in from a lady by the name of Mabel. Okay, she wrote to the podcast. She says, "Dear What Would Brian Bevan Say? My name's Mabel, and I'm not one for sport." You're right, Dennis?
Yes, Mabel.
Not one for sport, and also living in the south of England, rugby league is completely off my social radar. However, an old uni mate of mine, the lovely Rebecca, lives in Croft and is a lifetime fan of the Warrington Wolves and consequently occasionally listens to your podcast. Anyway.
Occasionally, she's not a diehard listener.
No, not. She wouldn't be living in Crofts. I mean, I know it's north of the river, but it's kind of, the river loops around there, doesn't it?
Anyway,
to understand why I'm writing to you, we have to go back 20 years to when Rebecca and I shared a house while studying at Bristol University. One Friday night, after watching Blind Date and under the influence of alcohol, my uni mates, including Rebecca, discussed the topic of sexual fetishes. Most of the housemates were pretty square, but my eyes lit up when Rebecca said she had a foot fetish. Pretty middle of the road fetish, I know, but Rebecca's confession led me, after even a few more drinks, to open up to my inhibitions and tell Rebecca my fetish. Nervously, and very quietly, so the other housemates couldn't hear, I told her I had a fetish for slight lisps.
Oh, God.
move on 20 years.
Let's go on to the predictions.
Move on 20 right. years, and during receiving my weekly email from Rebecca, she told me she'd come across a gentleman called Sam Sankey on a podcast with the hint of a lisp. I replied with my typical LOL, but also eagerly tuned in. Much to my disappointment, there was no lisp from this man whatsoever, so I never downloaded again. The podcast isn't my cup of tea, and if I'm honest, it's tarnished with a hint of casual sexism. All right, sweetheart, settle down. Then, out of the blue, my friend Rebecca, in last week's email, again mentioned the same man on the podcast, as he'd struggled to say the player's name, Thulis. Once again, I inquisitively downloaded the podcast, and it wasn't long before my knickers were around my ankles and my sexual gratification was nearly fulfilled. I say nearly because, unfortunately, I couldn't quite get off on Mr. Sankey only saying the name Thulis a couple of times on through the podcast. Therefore, can I ask a huge favour? I'd be ever so grateful if Sam could repetitively say the word Thulis 10 times. I don't think I need any more than that, and I might reach my lispering climax. Lots of love, Mabel.
Thulis, 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 fucking Thulis, Thulis, Thulis.
Oh, dear. That'll make it go all the way.
Predictions.
Afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Right, it's on to predictions. Okay, this is it, chaps. By hook or by crook, we finally made the playoffs. So next up for Wire, it's Hull, home of the band The House Martins. Dennis, Sam, can you see it Hull 4, Warrington 0, or will it be happy hour again for The Wire?
Last six times we've played them, we've won 4, lost 2, effectively giving us a 66% chance of winning this week. Looking at the season, Hull have actually scored more tries than us. They've scored 69 tries to our 55, but Warrington have made nearly 3,000 more metres during the season. But Warrington have also missed more tackles than Hull. And Hull have made more tackle busts. And yet, we've conceded half the amount of points that Hull have. Hull have conceded 436 points. We've conceded just 204. So a real mismatch.
Well, I've got a post-it here. I've got lose on one side and win on the other. When we get to the playoffs, and although Sam has just given us some statistics there on what Hull have done and stuff, actually, I don't think you can really predict it. So I'm going to flick it now. And it's landed on... I can't see.
Now, interestingly, we're actually at home this week. Because I know we're at home anyway because we're the highest team, but they've actually been played for the HJ.
Well, that could certainly swing it this way.
Particularly when Hull don't turn up until 9 o'clock because of the M62.
Yeah.
We also put out a vote yesterday. It's Warrington versus Hull in the Super League quarterfinal. Does Steve Price need to win to coach on in 2021? 188 votes have come in. 7% can I sit on the fence? ? 18% no, but 75% of the people think Price's job comes down to this game. I mean, it's COVID year. Possibly that's going to influence things. I think this could be make or break for Price, Sam. I think if we get to the semi-final, he's fine. Whether we lose in the semi-final or not, but yes. I think questions will be asked if he goes in the quarterfinal.
I agree. Fair comment.
My take on this is the fact that, you know, we've, I have to say, we've had a drink tonight, and we've been a bit sort of loose-lipped and stuff.
Well, two of us have.
Yeah, well, we definitely have. But yeah, we've arrived at the point of the season where I think, you know what, at the end of the day, we finished third. You know, it's a good position to be in. We're in the playoffs and stuff like that. But I have to say that if we do not progress in the next match against Hull, then I think that's time to sort of like say, take stock and make a big change. And I think that is really key in terms of, okay, of Warrington going next year. So I would like to just say that I've really enjoyed this podcast tonight. Rob, take us to the end.
Yeah, hang on. Just before you do.
Fucking caveat, shite.
No.
Okay, we've crossed the checker flag on another podcast. You know what to do, all you neck-tattooed scum. Tweet to WhatBevan, email to whatbevan@gmail.com, or if you waste your lunch break reading the Daily Mail online, there's always Facebook. So as Wire get ready to play hopefully not their last round of playoffs, from the most well-rounded caveat presenter on the podcast, it's an elliptical calling from Sam.
All the best.
And rounding off from a man that's never bought a round of drinks in his life, it's a spherical, bulbous bye-bye from Dennis.
The senior!
I'm Rob London, and just like Oliver Cromwell, I'm off to polish my round head. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say? I've got a few pictures of Mabel if you want them, so...